girl.
Now it happened in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for war to fight with Israel. And Achish said to David, "You assuredly know that you will go out with me to battle, you and your men." So David said to Achish, "Surely you know what your servant can do." And Achish said to David, "Therefore, I will make you one of my chief guardians forever." Now Samuel had died, and all Israel had lamented for him and buried him in Ramah, in his own city. And Saul had put the mediums and the spiritists out of the land. Then the Philistines gathered together and came and encamped at Shunem. So Saul gathered all Israel together, and they encamped at Gilboa. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dream, or by Urim, or by prophets. Then Saul said to his servants, "Find me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her." And his servants said to him, "In fact, there is a woman who is a medium at Endor." So Saul disguised himself and put on other clothes, and he went, and two men with him. And they came to the woman by night, and he said, "Please conduct a seance for me, and bring up for me the one I shall name to you." Then the woman said to him, "Look, you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums and the spiritists from the land. Why then do you lay a snare for my life to cause me to die?" And Saul swore to her by the Lord, saying, "As the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing." Then the woman said, "Whom shall I bring up for you?" And he said, "Bring up Samuel for me." And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman spoke to Samuel, saying, "Why have you deceived me? For you are Saul." And the king said to her, "Do not be afraid. What did you see?" And the woman said to Saul, "I saw a spirit ascending out of the earth." So he said to her, "What is his form?" And she said, "An old man is coming up, and he is covered with a mantle." And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed down. Now Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" And Saul answered, "I'm deeply distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me and does not answer me anymore, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore, I have called you, that you may reveal to me what I should do." Then Samuel said, "So why do you ask me, seeing the Lord has departed from you and has become your enemy? And the Lord has done for himself as he spoke by me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord nor execute his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore, the Lord has done this thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. The Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines." Immediately Saul fell full length on the ground and was dreadfully afraid because of the words of Samuel. There was no strength in him, for he had eaten no food all day or all night. And the woman came to Saul and saw that he was severely troubled and said to him, "Look, your maidservant has obeyed your voice, and I have put my life in my hands and heeded the words which you spoke to me. Now therefore, please heed also the voice of your maidservant, and let me set a piece of bread before you and eat, that you may have strength when you go on your way." But he refused and said, "I will not eat." So his servants, together with the woman, urged him, and he heeded their voice. Then he arose from the ground and sat on the bed. Now the woman had a fatted calf in the house, and she hastened to kill it. And she took flour and kneaded it and baked unleavened bread from it. So she brought it before Saul and his servants, and they ate. Then they rose and went away that night.
Quick thoughts on this chapter. It's a transition chapter as well as chapter 29. We're going to talk about it. 1 Samuel 30. Quick thoughts.
Well, for Saul putting everybody out, I'm kind of surprised how quickly they were able to tell him, find him somebody to do what he wanted. But the other thing was, I'm not so sure if that was really Samuel. They're saying it is. But at the same time, Samuel's dead. So I don't, I kind of wonder if it's a demon speaking through the woman and not really Samuel, because the information is already known. So that's just my looking at it. I have a little trouble with that, going to that kind of a person and wondering if, oh, well, this is the Lord. I don't really know.
Yeah, but she revealed that, I mean, she found out it was Saul when she saw Samuel.
The demons would know that, too. Mm-hmm. That's just it. I mean, there's nothing Satan, there's no new information here. I mean, that's where...
Yeah, prophecy of death.
So I have trouble with it because it was already told what was going to happen anyway before that.
The only thing new is, and I'm not saying this as Satan or not Satan, but the only thing new is the prophecy of his death. That wouldn't have been known.
No.
He said, you'll be with me this time tomorrow, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the only thing.
To your point, but not hearing in this Bible, it says the woman saw Samuel, verse 12. The questions have arisen as to the nature of Samuel's appearance. The text clearly indicates that Samuel, not an apparition, was evident to the eyes of the medium. God had miraculously permitted the actual spirit of Samuel to speak. Because she understood her inability to raise the dead in this manner, she immediately knew, one, that it must have been the power of God, number two, that her disguised inquirer must be Saul. So she didn't have the ability to raise the dead.
No.
But clearly the text says it was Samuel, so it wasn't a demon either. So yeah. She realized this was from God, and then her eyes were opened, and so on and so forth.
It's just that there's so much other stuff in the scriptures in other places that just make this kind of a difficult passage for me to read.
It says in verse 13, the divine being coming up out of the earth, or spirit. It says the word translated divine being, or again the word spirit, mm-hmm. right, is actually the Hebrew word meaning God, okay. Capital G, God, small g, angel, ruler, or judge. It can also be used to designate a likeness to one of these. From the being's perspective, Samuel appeared to be like a divine being ascending down the earth. There's no such miracle as this in all of Scripture. So this
footnote said, I saw a spirit, and it says Hebrew Elohim.
Yeah, divine being. Yeah. So this is a MacArthur study Bible, so that's his take on it. So from the earth. Why the earth?
What?
So the body came out of the spirit. Samuel came out of the earth. Why the earth? Why would you say that? Where is he?
Abraham's bosom.
No. Sheol.
Or Sheol, whatever, yeah. The believers were in.
And he's disturbed by coming up because he's probably in a state of bliss. And that's what believers are in a holding state of bliss at that point in time.
Yeah, I wouldn't
want to
come back.
Yeah. Except he's in a peaceful sleep and he was woken up. It's like you disturb him when you do that. So. Yeah. Anyone else in that chapter? Don, you were like, wow.
No, I'm just reading the notes in here. And it's, it's debatable whether it's a spirit or real or that's anything different than what you guys have been reading.
I did have a question because I'm on the same page with all this, but from your studies, if this would have not been Samuel, would the scriptures have said the being spoke to Saul, like the angelic being or the, you know what I'm saying? Like would the scriptures actually say Samuel there, then Samuel said to Saul, if God wasn't implying that what Samuel would have been, would there have been, in other places like this, do they use different terminology?
Well, this is unique, as you said, and so when it was, a medium can't call the of the dead, to Lloyd's point. So it'd either be demonic, or what, because of what the text is, but it was more of a miracle, and that's what shocked the woman. So, because if you're going to go to a medium and she can raise the dead, and they can't do that, but really what are they doing?
They're working in the realm of Satan.
Right, and they're working around Satan, but also they're just taking advantage of the people.
They don't have
resurrection. And they're making
money off that. They don't have resurrection.
Yeah. So, but they also have that ability to access the demonic realm. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a legitimacy to that, so we don't want to discount that either. What do you think about Saul's behavior? Anything stand out to you?
He's afraid.
He's afraid again.
Again, yeah. Here he gets rid of all the spiritists and mediums, and then, because God doesn't answer him, he goes to seek that out.
And then he goes to seek someone who's dead.
Yeah.
For advice. He doesn't even go to God.
He's a double-minded man. He's unstable in all the ways.
Yeah.
You know. How does what was the accepted way that God speaks to people back then?
Thurman
and Urim.
Dreams.
Dreams. Prophets or by Urim.
Towards the end of it, I'm looking at it like Saul's pouting here. Well, I'm not going to eat anymore. And then he finally gives it.
Yeah, the other one was angels.
How Samuel knew all that, I don't know. He's just a prophet that God has obviously.
Yeah.
Although I did wonder about this. Since we're going to be talking about it in Sunday school, when we die, you go to heaven. What will you know then?
You'll know fully as we are.
So there's a veil between you and the Lord right now, and then that's taken away. You will be fully known, and you will know fully. You'll see in a mirror clearly, not dimly. So I don't know what. They obviously are going to know more, and I wonder if they know to an extent the future of some people. I don't know, it's just a speculation there. But they're going to war, and let's get to chapter 29.
Then the Philistines gathered together all their armies at Aphek, and the Israelites encamped by a fountain which is in Jezreel. The lords of the Philistines passed in review by hundreds and by thousands. But David and his men passed in review at the rear of Achish. Then the princes of the Philistines said, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" And Achish says to the princes of the Philistines, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who has been with me these days or these years? And to this day I have found no fault in him since he defected to me." But the princes of the Philistines were angry with him. So the princes of the Philistines said to him, "Make this fellow return, that he may go back to the place which you have appointed for him. And do not let him go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become our adversary. For with what could he reconcile himself to his master, if not with the heads of these men? Is this not David, of whom they sang to one another in dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s? Then Achish called David and said to him, "Surely as the Lord lives, you have been upright, and you're going out and you're coming in with me, and the army is good in my sight. For to this day I have not found evil in you since the day of your coming to me. Nevertheless, the Lord's do not favor you. Therefore, return now and go in peace, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines." So David said to Achish, "But what have I done? And to this day, what have you found in your servant as long as I have been with you, that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king?" And Achish said to him, answered and said to David, "I know that you are as good in my sight as an angel of God. Nevertheless, the princes of the Philistines have said he shall not go up with us to the battle. Now therefore, rise early in the morning with your master's servants who have come with you. And as soon as you are up early in the morning and have light, depart." So David and his men rose early to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines. And the Philistines went up to Jezreel.
Okay. and stand up there briefly in that chapter.
The enemies of his Lord are the people of God. So, and here David is being saved from actually fighting.
Sure.
Fighting the Lord's people.
Why was David anxious to do that in the first place?
Probably to prove his loyalty. He also may have thought that they would never allow him to go to battle against Israel on the side of the Philistines. He was maybe guessing that they would, that this would happen. Well, the other thing is as well, is that while he's up, walked abruptly with them, what did David pledge not to do twice previously? Looked at it last week. Twice he pledged not to do something.
You mean destroy the seed of Saul? Or what?
Well, I'm asking you. I'll give it away at this next question. He had an opportunity to do something twice. So that's the Lord's anointing. That would be the army of the Lord. You know, leader that. Why is he breaking that now? Why is he willing to?
He's in a compromised position. I mean, he's going to die there because he's in the camp of the enemies of Israel. And they're out ready to do battle.
I mean, he could have been capitulating, compromising the standard because he didn't seek the mind of the Lord.
He's in a harmless state right now. From chapter 27.
So this is what happens when you are living carnality. You know, you're I mentioned that last week. They're not, you're in the flesh, you're not seeking the Lord, you're not living the vine life. I'm the vine, you're the branches. And so, he's, self is on the throne, and he's struggling, and so he'd been there about a year, it says, right? Days or a year. So we see all that's going on. This is what happens when you are not led by the Spirit. You're not dependent. You're not surrendered. And why is he in this position to begin with? What led him to go to the Philistines, do you believe?
He was tired.
He's tired. He was worn down. That's why we never make decisions, especially big decisions, when you're tired. Okay? All right, chapter 30, verses 1 through 6.
Now it happened when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day that the Amalekites had invaded the south and Ziklag, attacked Ziklag and burned it with fire, and had taken captive the women and those who were there from small to great. They did not kill anyone but carried them away and went their way. So David and his men came to the city, and there it was, burned with fire, and their wives, their sons, and their daughters had been taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. And David's two wives, Ahinoam and the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite, had been taken captive. Now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man with his sons and his daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God.
Okay, so what's happening here now? We like verse 6, right? We'll get to that in a moment. What had to happen for him to get to that point?
He had to hit the bottom.
The bottom, yeah. Yeah. If you remember 1 Samuel 15, I think also, one second, let me check here. And I think chapter 27 as well, my notes here. What should have happened to the Amalekites prior to this?
Wiped out.
They should have been wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
And that was Saul's. Should have wiped them out. Should have seen the consequences of disobedience. David also, he should have never left his town defenseless. Okay, he's not thinking wisely anymore because he's not seeking the mind of the Lord and so on.
But the Philistines did the same thing. It's like the whole army abandoned background, and they were able to go in and plunder, because they didn't just plunder Ziklag, they plundered several other places too.
You know, do you see the grace of God in this first six verses? Mm-hmm. What is that?
Nobody was killed.
Nobody was killed. For some reason, the Amalekites spared the people. And since this theme that is dominant throughout 1 Samuel is the sovereignty of God, what is God doing then through the Amalekites to David? He's correcting them.
Yeah.
Okay. He didn't use them for destruction, but for correction. So it's very gracious of God. Okay. Now I want you to step outside of the text for a moment and pretend that you are David in that situation. What might you be feeling and what might you be thinking?
What, in pity had I been?
Yeah.
I need to turn back to God.
Well, and he was, it's like the people turned on him. Mm-hmm. And they had loved him. And now it's like, ooh, here we are. Okay, but, Lord, what do I do?
I don't know what the word distressed means here. But it's not fear. Saul's fearful. David's not fearful. He's just distressed. Okay? His men are embittered towards him. Which would make sense that these people would quickly be embittered. Why?
Their wives were, and children were been taken. Mm-hmm. Their families were gone.
But why would they so quickly be embittered towards him as well? Who are these people?
Are they not Jews?
Who are these people, though?
They're
the distressed, the downcast, the disillusioned, the ones who are in debt, the poor. We call them like the white trash when you use that phrase. You know, they're that kind of people that God used and brought to Him. So most of those people walk around with a chip on their shoulder. My experience in life. And so, not all of them, but I think they're very quick to get to that.
Do you think that they knew that the wives and the children and everyone weren't murdered?
Yes, because their bodies would have been in blood.
Well, they burned, okay.
Yeah. There had been evidence of a destruction or of a ethnic cleansing, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
So. And so now David is put to the test. And how does he respond? So despite his circumstances, what does he do? He goes to the Lord and he is strong in faith. Okay. And God will use whatever he has to bring you back to him. Okay. Okay, verses 7 through 15.
Then David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, please bring the ephod here to me. And Abiathar brought the ephod to David. So David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I pursue this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered him, pursue, for you shall surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. So David went, he and the 600 men who were with him, and came to the brook Besor, where those stayed who were left behind. But David pursued, he and 400 men, for 200 stayed behind, who were so weary that they could not cross the brook Besor. Then they found an Egyptian in the field and brought him to David, and they gave him bread, and he ate, and they let him drink water. And they gave him a piece of cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. So when he had eaten, his strength came back to him, for he had eaten no bread nor drunk water for 3 days and three nights. Then David said to him, to whom do you belong, and where are you from? And he said, I am a young man from Egypt, servant of an Amalekite, and my master left me behind because 3 days ago I fell sick. We made an invasion of the southern area of the Cherethites in the territory which belongs to Judah, and of the southern area of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire. And David said to him, and you take me down to this troop. So he said, swear to me by God that you will neither kill me nor deliver me into the hands of my master, and I will take you down to this troop.
Okay, stand out to you in this chapter.
God divinely provided the Egyptian there for David.
It stood out to me as a man who weren't happy with him. What?
400 of them, right?
Well, we took first 600 and they left the 200 at the brook.
200 were in shape.
Yeah, 200 were in shape.
They weren't doing their cross.
They weren't. They went to the gym.
Anything else stand out to you?
The Egyptian believed in God.
You what?
He believed in God, or at least he referenced God.
Well, now that he's been humbled and he's back with the Lord, what's the first thing he does?
Oh, the ephod.
There we go. He's back to that again. He's now dependent and surrendered, and he goes to the Lord, and he gets direction. Okay. That was missing in the previous chapters. Okay. So he's back to living that vine life. Any other thoughts?
I heard 3 days without water. You can't last that long. Was it 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food, or something like that?
Because
I'm a survivalist, I kind of watch those things, and they say like 3 days if you're doing a lot of intense training or something like that, and you don't have any water for that, like by the third day, you're not going to do very well.
Did they count days back then as like from Friday night to Sunday morning would be 3 days? Is a part of 3 days?
I don't know about that. It's a good point.
Well, that's why they gave him food and water. He was probably delirious and dehydrated and passed out.
Well, they sure didn't feed him when the Amalekites didn't feed him.
No.
Yeah, he was sick, so they just left him.
Left him to die. He was Egyptian. He wasn't one of them. He'd be like a Norwegian. Okay, verses 16 to 20.
And when he had brought him down, there they were, spread out all over the land, over all the land, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil which they had just taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. Then David attacked them from twilight until the evening of the next day. Not a man of them escaped, except 400 young men who rode on camels and fled. Not a man except for 400. So David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives. And nothing of theirs was lacking, either small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything which they had taken from them. David recovered all. And then David took all the flocks and herds they had driven before those other livestock and said, this is David's spoil.
Okay, thoughts?
They sure recovered their strength.
Yeah.
That's a long time to fight. I get pooped out just doing maybe just a half hour. These guys are going the morning.
24 hours, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how they can do it.
Well, he's obviously back in the good graces of his men again.
He was successful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really successful.
If they were spread all over the land, there wouldn't have been any. Easy. They weren't all clustered and easy to surround.
And obviously the Philistines weren't too bright either, because they left their lands unprotected.
Yeah.
So now their stuff's taken, and the stuff of David or Judah, they say here, is
but
taken.
There must have been a whole pile of them, because David is using 400 men to fight now, mm-hmm. and it says they basically slaughtered all of them except for the 400 that got away. So there must have been a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, they're busy dancing and eating and drinking.
So David recovered all that the Amalekites had taken, and he rescued his two wives. Miraculously, nothing was missing. This is a miracle, really. And he gets even more. Verse 20, he captured all the sheep and the cattle, which the people drove ahead of the other livestock. And they said, this is David's spoil. So he literally looks like he returns with more than he had lost. Okay? Any other questions, thoughts about that?
God is good.
I was
going to
say.
And how is God bringing about the end of the Amalekites? Almost completely wiped out through David. And it was Saul's responsibility. Okay. Verses 21 through 25.
Now David came to the 200 men who had been so weary that they could not follow David, whom they also had made to stay at Oak Besor. So they went out to meet David and to meet the people who were with him. And when David came near the people, he greeted them. Then all the wicked and worthless men of those who went with David answered and said, because they did not go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil that we have recovered, except for every man's wife and children, that they may lead them away and depart. But David said, my brethren, you shall not do so with what the Lord has given us, who has preserved us and delivered into our hand the troop that came against us. For who will heed you in this matter? But as his part is who goes down to the battle, so shall his part be who stays by the supplies. They shall share alike. And so it was. From that day forward, he made it a statute and an ordinance for Israel to this day.
Okay. Why did those worthless men act this way? What do you think?
Greed. And they had no feeling or compassion on their brethren.
Yeah. My notes here are precious. MacArthur writes, from the beginning of David's flight from Saul, he became captain of those who were distressed, discontent, and in debt, the least likely to exercise kindness and grace to others. Okay. This same expression was used of the sons of Eli for them, worthless men, of Nabal, the fool of a servant. Yeah, we get the whole idea there, okay? So yeah, that's who these people are. And they're with David, and they're probably good warriors, but yeah. And David institutes now, what would happen if he capitulated to this group? You've been compromised. Mm-hmm. What does he use to justify his answer, by the way?
They stayed with the baggage.
What?
They stayed with the baggage.
Okay. But what else?
He said, you can't do with what the Lord has given us.
Yeah, it's
the
Lord's.
Lord that gave us
it.
This. Yeah. It's not that so we fought for it.
We're going to share it equally. Something else you have to deal with, isn't it? It's not one thing, it's the other. 5 minutes left. Okay, sharing the spoils, verses 26 to 31.
Now when David came to Ziklag, he sent some of the spoil to the elders of Judah, to his friends, saying, here is a present for you from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord. To those who were in Bethel, those who were in Ramoth of the south, those who were in Jatir, those who were in Aror, those who were in Sithmoth, those who were in Eshtemoa, those who were in those who were in the cities of the Jerahmeelites, those who were in the cities of the Kenites, those who were in Hormah, those who were in Korashan, those who were in Aphek, those who were in Hebron. Let's get through this, and to all the places where David himself and his men were accustomed to rove.
By show of hands, who would like to hear Carol read that again? Come on! Raise your hand.
She's done good.
She butchered those names better than I would. I couldn't say it at all either. I don't even know how you even say these names. Ramoth, the Negev, Jatir. Oh, Roar was a funny one, though. A Roar?
Yeah.
A Roar? Sifmoth.
Sifmoth.
Eshtemoah. Rackle or Rachel?
I know.
Jeremelites, Kenites.
You're also assuming all of those letters.
Or not, of course.
None of them are silent, but some of them are silent. Can you pronounce them?
Yeah. Why did he share his spoils?
Because these are all people that have been out from the past.
Yeah.
It's also wise.
I don't know if
they're people. Getting ready to keep.
I mean, I'm guessing here, but why do you think David did share the spoils, though? I mean, what's... You get...
Didn't some of those people help him
in the past?
And then he was only returning. They probably were raided by the...
Could be.
But,
You know, I think he knows what it's like to be in need. And it was not a good time for the people under Saul, so...
And he had enough to do that.
He had more than enough to do that. And I don't think he was trying to curry favor for the future. I think steal the election.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So.
Stuff on the box.
Yeah.
He had a king's heart. He was trying to provide for his people.
Yeah. That's a good point. And that's in all the places, and all the places where David himself and his men were accustomed to go.
Yeah.
So he is sharing his spoils.
Yeah.
A generous heart. Any other thoughts? So we have a picture in the previous study in chapters 28 and 29. Or 27, of David just tired and he falls into a state of carnality, living in his life. And God uses, a trial, a test, tribulation, a hardship, to bring him to his senses, to get him back on his knees, surrender, and depend once again. Now he is, who's on the throne of his life now? God is. And it's evidenced by the fact that he's seeking the Lord. By doing the will of God, he was victorious by the hand of God. And then generosity. Yeah. Those are now our signs of someone that is a lot like God. God-like. So David is learning and learning that these tests and tribulations, difficult times, we cannot be surprised at the fiery trial that is among us. We cannot, we should not. Okay? It's written all over the Bible.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts? Anybody?
This week in Jesus' name, we pray.
And now David's going to be. I think, if I remember correctly.
Big trial in.
What?
The song's gonna die. The song's gonna die.